I've just hit record on my recorder. That means I also have a clock that just started, so I'll know how long we've gone. Okay. I think
if you want to clap your hands, of course, so I can sync up the...
I know how that works. All right. Hello and welcome to The Big Show from the British Tech Network. I'm Eric Lanigan filling in for Ewan Rankin, and we have a panel of the regulars, some great people here to talk about some very interesting stories this week. A lot of stories coming from the U.S. We've got news from Apple. We've got news from Verizon and AT&T, possibly changing cellular voice minutes and data for maybe the rest of the world. Eventually, we'll find that out. Let's start out by saying hello to our panelists, starting with James Hart. Hi, James.
Good evening, Eric. Good evening, listener. And hello. Yeah. All of them.
Good week.
To be honest with you, I'm completely, it's taken us a little while to get going, so I'm just sort of ramping up. I ought to have some chocolate coffee beans, really, to because I'm starting to fall asleep already.
Yeah, thanks. Joe DeMax, I should mention, is switching the show, so thank you to him. He had to rewire some things, so getting a little bit started late, and also I think we're a little bit small-talked out, so we'll go through the introductions quickly. Also, Sarah Gray. Hi, Sarah.
Hi, Eric.
How's it going?
How are you doing? Yeah, busy day, and I had a bit of a rush to get back in time for the show, but I'm here now, so. And hi, everyone.
Thanks, Sarah. And also, Alex G. Fox joining us. How's it going, Alex?
I'm very good, Eric, and it's great to be on a show with you again.
Thank you. And so also I have to point out, and I'm not saying this to make fun of Joe, but because I just find it so funny and I've never heard of anyone doing this before. Right now, the show is being backed up as Joe records it and switches it from his house onto VHS tape.
I know you don't believe me. I
tell you what, Joe, you're going to have to show us the VHS tape after we finish recording.
Look, I'll bring it to the bash and we'll all watch it together.
Now, where did you, is this a tape that you bought recently or did you have to like, is this a tape that's like 10 years old that you've had around that you just keep recycling?
The last, I recycle it until I need it, yeah. But it's mainly because I have a TV over there that I can watch the Wirecast output on, and it's like, I looked at it one day, I was like, it's got a VHS machine built in with a recorder. So I just threw a tape in.
That's funny. I never would have thought of that. I never would have imagined. So have you actually released, are any podcasts that have been produced by yourself actually been released on VHS or from the VHS backup?
Until today.
Okay, so this may be a podcasting first, folks. All right, let's jump right into the stories then. I want to start with Verizon because I think this is interesting. Really the first time that they've restructured their pricing for cellular minutes and cellular data radically. AT&T, the second largest carrier in the U.S., who together with Verizon command over half of the customer base of cell phones in the U.S., and really the only data people because you cannot roam with data. So that's a big deal here. And they just changed everything. And I think this may be coming over to Europe eventually, or could this be the future of any place that has big data needs? What they did was they made it so that you pay as a line access fee, they call it. They give you completely unlimited voice minutes, completely unlimited text minutes. Now, right there, that sounds unusual because usually you choose the lowest plan for voice and the lowest plan for text that you can afford, and you compensate on data, at least if you're a geek like us here on the panel. But this favors people who use more voice and data. Sorry, use less voice and text and more data. So basically, they're going to charge you more for the data, but make the voice and text unlimited, basically free. Pricing structure breaks down like this. For smartphones, you pay $40 a month. Basic phones, $30. Notebooks, $20. And tablets, $10. That's the line cost that gets you unlimited everything else. Then, on top of that, you pay per gigabyte for data. A gigabyte, your first gigabyte, $50. Second gigabyte, $60. For 4 gig plan is $70. 6 gigs, $80. Up to 10 gigabytes for $100. Obviously the best deal, but I think most people are going to stick with that 50 or 60 gig. What this means for most people, if you previously had the lowest price plan, your price now goes up $30. But if you were on a family plan where you had lots of devices, each with its own pool or bucket of gigabytes, that is now shared. So one data plan shared across all your devices, up to 10 devices, but the data costs more. So it's an interesting thing. People are trying to wrap their heads around this. What do you guys think over there in the UK? Do you think this could be coming to your shores anytime soon?
Can I start with one very quick thing, if that's okay. Sorry.
Sure, James, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, I don't think we have family plans in the UK.
No, never seen it.
Really? I'm surprised. So you have no shared minute plans. Each phone has its own minutes, and it just gets cut off if you didn't use them at the end of the month, right?
Exactly.
Interesting.
We did at some point. I do remember at some point I had a plan where it was very early on when me and my wife, terrible English, my wife and I shared an amount of minutes per month. But that was, it's got to have been 15 years ago.
And Sarah,
we did share an amount of time.
Yeah. Sarah, what were you going to say?
I was going to say, I think it's an interesting recognition by Verizon that data is the future. And that, you know, voice is just, well, you know, okay. You know, with smartphones, you use way more data than you do minutes if you've got a smartphone in terms of, you know, that's where the money's to be made for the mobile providers.
And then, I saw today, Sarah, a man on a bus streaming the football match on his iPad. That is a massive amount of data going back down the pipe.
Yeah.
Well, it depends if he's got a Wi-Fi in his pocket.
So James, here in the U.S., let's suppose that entire game was about an hour or two long, and if you're watching it at even standard def, even VHS quality, that's for Joe's benefit, you'd probably use about a gigabyte of download bandwidth. That'd be $50. So what do you think about that? Does that still seem awfully high?
Yes. Simply speaking. But the thing is, what I don't know about the US at the moment is what the infrastructure is like, because at this stage, they don't want to encourage massive take up if they haven't got the infrastructure to be able to support it. And so
Which
often
is
they
the
put
same as here,
things
it?
To make
it.
Well, yeah, but if you look at what 3's done, okay, so their reception is patchy in areas, but the fact that you can get now a 3 unlimited bandwidth 3G connection or 3 or HDSDPA connection for a month. For I think it's something like 30 or 40 quid. It's just phenomenal, really.
Yeah,
I'm really
sure they're providing it, but is the infrastructure really there to support it if they had massive take-up?
Well, this is it. I think the 3 price is reasonable, in my opinion. And ever since they brought out the MiFi, I think we've been in a fairly favourable position as far as data goes, in that you could pretty much, unless you do something really crazy, do emails, perhaps the odd YouTube video, I don't know, some Skyping, you don't need a landline to have a MiFi over the course of a month if you're willing to pay that extra to cover it, especially now. Because how much do you pay on your cable modem or your DSL?
Actually, James, let me just interrupt to throw in this little bit of data here, because just in case anyone's still wondering. So what you said about the MiFi, with the old Verizon plan, and this is probably how it is in the UK, I'm guessing, you pay for a MiFi, it has its own data plan. Your iPad has its own data plan. Your smartphone has its own data plan. If you got a 3G or 4G modem, it has its own data plan. If you've got, you know, then your anything else has its own individual data plan. You buy gigabytes a month. If you don't use them, you've just lost out on the money. If one device uses more than the other, there was no compensating. Now, the data price went up, but it's shareable across every device with every member of the family. Now, do you think on average that may be, would eventually save people over there money, or do you think it would work the opposite?
Is that to James?
Anyone.
Ollie, so it's an open question, Alex.
Okay, no, I just to sort of go back 2 steps, because I didn't jump in quickly enough. Far be it from me to sort of say to argue, but doesn't it strike you as a little bit odd that the moment Apple announce that FaceTime is going to go over 3G, Verizon then swap over from voice to data? Because of if that's the what's going to be happening in the future, if Apple are doing it, then Android will do it. They'll do something similar. So are they betting that everything is going to go FaceTime or whatever the Android or
some
whoever
kind of
voice, is equivalent?
Voice over IP solution, yeah. That's what I was saying, Alex. I think that's recognition that everything's going to be data before long.
But yeah, I mean, but the thing is, whether you like it or not, that industry is being led by Apple's design. And Apple's design has been from the very beginning to make a phone, the least important part of the phone is being able to make a telephone call. Now, the data on my iPhone is far more solid than trying to make a phone call. And if I could use FaceTime, even if it was FaceTime audio rather than trying to make a telephone call audio, I would rather use the FaceTime audio only if that was a facility, because I know I'm going to get a better call.
You know, interesting thing here that seems kind of counterintuitive. At first I thought, well, yeah, everything is going to data, you know, the next generation LTE, which is really the official 4G, which no country has yet, including us over here. We have sort of the watered down 4G, which is really like 3G plus. It's that HSDPA plus, you know, LTE with a CDMA voice channel. Any 4G phone from Verizon right now has the LTE for data, but still uses the older CDMA network for voice. That's why they often have bigger batteries and lower battery life, because they've got two antennas and they're working on two separate networks. In the future, LTE voice traffic will travel as data, and there will not any longer be a separate line for voice. So thinking about that, it almost seems a little bit weirder that they would count voice as unlimited, because would that then mean that they don't care about that data? Is voice data somehow different than data? I mean, does that even make sense to anybody?
Yeah, but maybe if they could, say you've got a bandwidth, and if that bandwidth, you've got a 50-50 split between being able to use data on half the bandwidth and voice and text for whatever you want on the other bandwidth. You can give away voice. You can let people have as much as they like of that if you make voice only 10% of the bandwidth and keep the other 90% of the bandwidth for the data. And then possibly...
voice isn't that much of a bandwidth anyway, though, is it, Alex?
It's just audio. Going to be,
you know what you're going to have people doing?
Barely, a couple of 100K.
Hold on, I just realized, you know what people are going to do? This is going to... This movement here is going to restart the cellular modem wave. You're going to have people all across the world bonding multiple cell phone connections over the voice channel. Exactly. They're going to bond together the multiple 14.4, 28K voice channels to buy... because that's unlimited and the data now costs so much.
But also, if you think about it, if they're going to move everything over to data and people are going to use the data, infrastructure-wise, there's quite... I mean, most of the things that we use on a day-to-day data with our mobile devices isn't necessarily a problem with speed, because if you're waiting for an email, you don't really see how long that email takes to come down. And most of us don't sit there and watching the football on an iPad and things like that.
It's only stream that requires that, yeah.
Yeah, so but if you're going to start pushing more and more to the data side of the network, people are going to expect a better service from that data. And I think that could be an issue.
This is an interesting point, actually. I was exchanging tweets with somebody, and they were saying that their text message costs reached a stage where actually what they started doing, they moved over to something called Yak, and I think there's something called Kik as well, which is these multi-platform text message services. They run in the background on your phone, and basically, you text someone, and it sends a notification just like a text, but it uses a data channel. It's got to be quick, and it's a hell of a lot cheaper than texts.
Yeah, I mean, text has always been, as far as I know, it's been a cash cow. It's as if they've made absolute fortunes on the back of charging people for text.
Yeah,
this is going to really cut it out. If they can find the right type of platform for it, text will be no more.
That's right. It's been theorized since the beginning of texting that it really cost the carriers almost nothing, because it uses a sort of an additional channel that was used to talk to the antenna, I think. So it was basically... Yeah, so they could charge, you know, hundreds of times to one for what they were paying for the texting. So I think we can all agree here that part of the reason that they can do this and what amounts to really an increase in price, especially over the long term, you know, is in the U.S. we have no competition for bandwidth, either wired or wireless. So with that in mind, I do want to segue into some other bandwidth news. And again, do you guys think this is coming over to the U.K. anytime soon? Wall Street Journal reports on a Comscore survey, I guess. Video consuming habits, hours per year, hours per viewer, it has increased. So our bandwidth is going up, and many are saying that this is a attempt by Verizon and other people to reduce that, to prevent cord cutting. We've got in the last year, comparing March 2011 to March 2012, 50% increase in the number of hours of web videos, online videos per viewer, 50% more hours, 30% more unique viewers, 20% more videos per viewer, and 23% more minutes per video have been watched. At the same time, we've got sort of a battle going on between the people who make the content and the people who sell the bandwidth. And in the United States, the way things work out is often these disputes are settled between lobbying money, between lobbyists versus lobbyists battling each other for the congressperson's ear and to show them the charts and the graphs and the legislation that they think is going to convince them the most. So the story now is that Netflix is really beefing up their lobbying efforts. They spent $500,000 lobbying in 2011. Amazon spent $2.2 million to lobby last year. Comcast spends $4.5 million in the first quarter and $20 million last year. AT&T also $20 million. Google spent about $9 million and already $5 million already this year. So this is what we have now, basically. It's everyone just fighting for individual concessions, you know, give us more rules, give us less rules. What is your takeaway so far? Does this seem totally strange to you that you'd have that you'd have to have in the UK your web content providers like Netflix, Amazon, and YouTube going to your politicians and spending money to talk to them?
Well, the funny thing is, of course, is most of those are based in the US anyway.
Right.
So for them to lobby our government and the French government, and well, you really don't want to go lobbying the French government because they'll get very upset and start banning you. The idea of an American company lobbying a government that isn't the American government just seems unthinkable.
Here's another quote. Internet video providers like Netflix have expressed concern that the limits are aimed at stopping consumers from dropping cable TV and switching to online video providers. They also worry that cable companies will give priority to their own online video offerings on their networks to stop subscribers. Big deal here. Comcast recently said that you can receive your Xbox, or rather you can receive your Comcast cable TV over your Xbox as a set-top box. It's being sent over the internet, and yet it won't count against your bandwidth allocation, and it gets its own special.
Yeah, exactly that on our Virgin Media TiVos. In fact, quite a lot of stuff gets delivered over the internet on there. They have their own fairly quick own internet connection that you can get a web browser. So even if your internet's gone down, you can still browse the internet on your TiVo, which is a bit of a waste of time anyway.
So
what I'm taking away from all this is the fact that it amuses me that the opportunity for people to video call each other that's been around for ages still hasn't picked up. People aren't interested in talking to each other using video. They're interested in watching content rather than talking to each other on their mobile devices.
That's a good point. Yeah. Go ahead, Alex.
Sorry. We have Ofcom, and as much as we like to bitch about our country and our government, Ofcom grab them by various bits of their bodies and they don't let go. We have a lot of competition in this country, and it's because they were given no choice. We had British Telecom, or the post office as it was, and then British Telecom, one company. I think a company called Mercury came in, and the government said
communications,
and the government then said, you have got to hand over access to all your lines. And BT sort of jumped up and down, but what could they do? The government said, you've got to give them access. Then they built their own network. Then that's turned into the cable network. So the TV was the same thing. Our satellite provider came before our cable provider, and our government made our satellite provider let the cable provider have their channels. It would not happen in this country because of it would not be stood for. But as for sort of downloading the internet, I use a TiVo. I take it James does as well. It has its own internet supplier and various things, but I mean, you're talking about the amount that people are watching via the internet, their TV. I reckon I have a TiVo box and I have three other cable boxes, and I don't know if I've used any of them other than online television or online movie or whatever it is in the last 2 weeks. So, it's the convenience of it. It's not being tied down to where you're normally tied down to. So I think it's going to become, it won't be long until some people completely cut off access to all media other than being streamed via the internet.
Now,
if my kids would let me, I'd do that tomorrow.
So let me rephrase this question specifically. In your country, do you have an effort, a strong effort, a multi-million dollar obviously not lobbying, because we already said that's pretty much here, but just a huge big money effort to prevent cord cutting. Are cord cutters seen as the enemy to the internet or to video in the UK?
I don't think it's really enough of a problem. I know it's becoming a problem in the US, Eric, but I don't think it's really hit over here yet, that concept.
But everybody that could be affected by it have and are in the process of starting their own system anyway. For instance, British Telecom, the people I mentioned earlier, I can't say too much because I do know more than I should do, but they're about to announce a big update to their TV system, which is an internet-based TV system with a decoder box. And one of the things they've just received is the live football, which is, you know, in this country, is the biggest seller for any TV. So
it's millions of pounds, isn't it?
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
I didn't hear. Okay. Who said that?
Sarah said something, I think. Okay, well, I said certainly
in terms of sport, it was £3 billion, wasn't it?
Ridiculous amount.
Yeah, so basically all our paid-for networks have access to the Premier League football, which is the thing. They've all got their own TV movie channels. They've all got their own subscribe to movies. I don't remember, but I think Netflix is on the TV box, or it's coming to the TiVo box. I can't remember if it's on it or not, because it's so long since I bothered looking at it. But, you know, the plan is for the Netflix and things like that, Love Film, to be accessed through your other providers anyway. So I mean, it's certainly not an issue at the moment in this country, but the whole idea, the way it's been building on this in this country, you'll have X amount of providers, but they will all basically provide you the same thing, and they'll all be made to. I mean, I dare say, I remember when Virgin first started, which are the cable company, they didn't have some of the satellite companies' channels, and it was a big hoo-ha, but the government stepped in and made them given it. Mm-hmm. So there's very little difference between the two of them now, because the government stepped in and said you can't have an advantage.
What's occurred to me, Alex, is actually I think that the population of the UK doesn't realise how bloody lucky that they are to have such excellent, amazing choice of content. I can go on my Virgin box and get almost every Sky channel. I can go on the Sky box and get the, you know, I have so much choice. I don't even need to subscribe to any television provider to get HD content through Freesat or Freeview HD. I can watch stuff streaming on the internet for nothing more than it costs me my bandwidth a day or a month. It's phenomenal what we've got. And I think I guess it's because we've got a fairly small population, considering in comparison to the US, and of course a much greater population density into a smaller space. I don't want to speak, for example, for those people who live out in Orkney, who probably get a very they probably have to sit at home to watch stuff rather than wandering around the town. I don't know what their coverage is like, actually. I guess an island is probably better than the Yorkshire moors, but
if you've got a big satellite dish, you've got a big satellite dish, it doesn't matter where you go. And also remembering that they are boosting the ability to get pretty decent broadband via satellite now as well. I mean, there's a few places where my parents live in the country that if you want proper broadband, you do it via satellite. And,
And they've gotten the latency down low enough that works? They've gotten the latency down low enough that it's actually considered a credible, comparable with like a wireline broadband?
Yeah, I mean, there's certain places. I mean, the distances and obviously our distances aren't anything compared to yours, but the want of the telecoms company to put anything in certain areas is, it's nil in some places. And again, I think it's government subsidised. If you live in an area where there is nothing, then they help pay for these big dishes, which make a satellite network, and it works quite well.
Mm.
No, it's not very expensive.
By the way, I wouldn't be too quick to say that it's because of a smaller physical space, because we used to have lots of competition, and really it was because of a couple of significant legal rollbacks that allowed everyone to become a monopoly in the last few years. But changing the...
We haven't got a crap government.
Yeah. So, okay, so changing the story a little bit, let's
actually
go into...
I think the one we have, but we're different in a different way.
Yeah. Facebook.
It's not that political, guys.
Are the days of wild user growth over at Facebook, is the question asked by the Wall Street Journal. They show a graph showing that checking in the amount of total minutes spent on Facebook versus other sites since 2009 to 2012 spiked significantly in 2010 and then went down to less than half of that in 2011 and half of that in 2012. They're also seeing significantly lower numbers of growth, meaning brand new users. And the previous number I gave was for amount of time spent on the site. It didn't say whether they're including mobile in there, so I don't know that. But what do you think? The point here is that Facebook has pretty much saturated the world for their user base, and already 50% of their revenue is dependent on ads from the U.S. alone. It's not like they're going to make that up in, you know, third world countries, developing nations that are getting internet access and getting phones, because if they're not spending money from the advertisers and turning that into spending from the customers, you know, that is not a revenue source for Facebook. What is your thought on this, guys?
Well, it's about time, isn't it? I mean, if something becomes available to the people, the majority of, especially if it's free, the majority of people will try it. But I think for a large amount of people, and I'm talking mainly about myself here as an example, you can try something even though it's free. And after a certain while, you sort of, well, I'm not that interested in talking to the people that I... There was a reason why I didn't talk to them. That's why I needed Facebook to get back in touch. And there's only so many people that you're ever going to meet. And after a while, you realize that, you know, the majority of people that have found you or you found them aren't the people you thought they were. So your usage will naturally drop off anyway.
And I would say actually that the ones you do want to hold on to, you find a side channel for them. You go through Skype so you can have a more direct one-to-one communication with them. You exchange emails. Yes, email is still going, surprisingly.
That's exactly where I was going.
A mobile app like Kick, like iChat, and you will find a way to communicate with the people you want to hold on to. And therefore, you go to Facebook every now and then to find out who of your ancient friend's birthday it is today, and maybe ever go with words with friends or something. And actually, that's another good point, is the fact that Zynga has found there's been a dip in the use of the Zynga games as well. So people aren't as interested in faffing around. It's nothing more than just whiling away the boredom going on Facebook a lot of the time.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, but, I agree with you.
But it's like, if you give enough people something free, they're all going to take it. But a big enough majority of them are going to realize that they don't actually want it, and then it's going to drop off. The thing is, it's in a funny way, it's sort of quite clever. It's sort of the Apple idea of doing things. If you release things slowly enough, then you're always going to keep demand up. If you flood the world in one go, there's going to be a peak, and then it's going to drop, and it's going to drop faster and faster. Now, exactly as James said, you'll find other avenues to talk to people that you actually want to talk to. You don't put things on Facebook because half the time you put things on Facebook, you're thinking of all the people you don't want to see it. Oh, something really nice happened, but I really don't want that idiot that got my name from the guy down the pub, or I don't want that girl that I knew 30 years ago that's turned out to be really, really weird now. You know, so you actually, it's like a big marketplace where you've learned to pick and choose who you want from it, and then you take them somewhere else and meet them in a side room. You know, it's that sort of thing.
And I thought of an interesting point. The way that people look at Facebook, especially in this kind of a figure, is the amount of time spent on the site. In the graph here, they compare it to time spent on AOL sites, Google sites, Microsoft sites, Yahoo sites. The idea being that any kind of relatively closed, fenced-in area, I mean, obviously AOL, Yahoo, not as much, doesn't really have a login mandatory like Facebook does. But once you're on at least the .com of their, you know, top-level domain, they have dominion over the ads that they show to you. The more time you spend there, the more chance you have for your eyeballs to glance upon ads that could turn into some kind of payment or something to them. I forgot where I was going with that. Too much explanation. I look at that and say, Well, of course, people will naturally spend less time on Facebook as they find other games elsewhere. If I found out that Zynga, like you said, was going down dramatically in time spent on it, or that Facebook use on Facebook.com was going down in proportion, that people were stopping using the ancillary stuff Facebook does. That's what I'm getting at. Facebook has a core product. It's the personal profile page. I think they're still king as far as the personal profile page goes. Mm. But for everything else, the mini games, the little, you know, all the little doodads and add-ons and the apps and the games, that kind of stuff. When I hear statistics that people are leaving Facebook for those things and going to other sites for those activities, mm-hmm. some analysts are shocked. I'm not surprised at all. I say that's how the internet's always worked. There is no brand loyalty if switching is free. Absolutely and not. As simple as typing in a different URL.
Who's gonna tell the world what Carl's dad did?
I don't get it.
I guess it'll be you then, James.
I'll quote it. I had to laugh this week about Facebook, though. My dad was watching dodgy videos, and every time he did, Facebook reported it to us all.
Dear poor Carl.
Oh,
that's not our Carl. That's an American Carl. Just to put that straight, that's not our Carl that works. Yeah,
Carl's dad, if you're listening, we didn't hear that.
No. Wouldn't like to be you at the bash, mate. Right. No, I mean, I'm not surprised that people are going elsewhere because one of the things that Facebook does, I mean, the games might be quite addictive, but they're also very, well, I don't know how to put, they're not very good. You know, they're good because lots of other people are playing it. But if you think, when that started 2-3 years ago or 4 years, I don't know what it was, how many of us had interactive play with your friends games on your Android phone and your iPhone and this sort of thing? The phone and the 99p app, I think, has taken its place. Bejeweled, I'll play it on my phone against a friend via some network, or I want to play draw something, I'll do something like that. I don't need Facebook to do it for me anymore.
You're right, Alex. I think a big part of that appeal of the Facebook games have been the novelty. They've been the little mini game. I mean, we've seen this with iPhone games. We've seen this with internet memes. You know, little things pop up and they're huge. And with the exception of Angry Birds and maybe a handful of things, it doesn't really last or expand. It's just a very brief thing where everyone's obsessed with it and then they move on to the next big thing. I think this has been a problem for the big institutional investors who don't think of it that way. They think of a brand and a company like Facebook that has all that money as existing forever because they think of it like a traditional company, and they don't think of people just moving on constantly to the next, chasing the next novelty.
You know, but I heard a really interesting stat today about apps on mobile phones, which was quite interesting. Do you know that only 4% of applications on mobile phones ever get opened after the first 30 days of being installed?
Wow, only 4% ever get opened. The first time or a second time?
No, after 30 days after they've been installed on the phone, only 4% of them ever get used again.
Wow.
Good grief.
Well, if I look at my iTunes library, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of apps. And even when I go down I don't even remember installing most of them. I mean, they're not on there now. I don't even remember buying them.
As we transition from Facebook to Apple, some interesting stuff from the Apple WWDC keynote presentation from Tim Cook, Phil Schiller, Scott Forstall, and that new guy who had the shaky hands that one time, and now he'll never be able to live that down because everyone will remember that as the first time they ever saw him on the stage. Unfortunately, I feel bad for him, but I think, you know, how do you forget something like that? But Facebook finally has some Apple integration, although strangely, they buried it in the presentation. They did what I thought was almost an advertisement for Twitter. They talked about how Twitter integration, starting with the previous version of iOS, where you could now tweet from any application, it was Twitter tied in closely to the iOS operating system. They advertised, or what felt like an advertisement, saying how many more users and tweets they've driven to Twitter as a result. And during that whole presentation time, they never mentioned Facebook. They actually doctored the image that they showed of their OS X Mountain Lion, the new OS coming out later this summer. I think they photoshopped it to remove the Facebook icon. Because then after the presentation, you go on their website on apple.com and it's showing on Mountain Lion, the little share button includes Facebook right alongside with Twitter. Their notification center, Facebook, right alongside with Twitter. It says coming in the fall, not the, in the summer, but yet they removed Facebook references from the rest of their presentation, and yet they're bringing them in for a big deal. What do you guys think of that? You, why bury the lead instead of having, you know, Zuckerberg come up on stage and say what a glorious new partnership this is?
Maybe it's not quite as glorious as they liked to, they thought it was in the first place.
I mean, that's what I'm sure. I'm sure it is political. So, I mean, what do you guys think?
Well, I'll let someone else talk because I've been ranting about Apple all day, and I don't want to upset anyone else. So, let someone else talk.
That's normally my territory.
So, am I just the only one that found that suspicious that they just totally glossed over Facebook in the presentation and then just included it on the website? Because I think that's a pretty big deal. I think Facebook integration is more useful to the average person than Twitter is.
And I'm playing with the latest preview on my Mac, and I would tell you this, it's not in there yet, so that's why there wouldn't have been a demo, because I don't think they have it yet. I mean, I can show you now. That's where it would be, yeah?
Right.
Not there.
Yep. Yep. Strange, though, that they, I mean, I forget when exactly they brought it in, but they had not mentioned it. I think they left it out of the OS 10 announcement and mentioned it in iOS. Does that sound right?
I think iOS is getting, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So,
well, this is the point, though, I was going to make, is the fact that Facebook have had all this opportunity to develop a reasonably decent application for the iOS devices and the Android devices, and their Facebook offerings are still pretty woeful, in my opinion. All right, so it's okay, but it's not brilliant by any means. You can't. I mean, no. It's just. It's still very much an add-on, and certainly if it doesn't crash on the Android phone, it's a bit clunky on the iPhone.
I've never used it on my Android phone.
What they would do with it, because unless you go to a website and click, I want to share this on Facebook. Who shares websites on Facebook? It's not the first thing you do. What you do on Facebook is you update your status and wish people happy birthday. In my opinion, I don't really understand what they're trying to do with it. Maybe I'm being thick. Maybe I don't use Facebook in the right way.
Well, okay, so let me mention that then, because one of the other features that I thought was a first for mainstream desktop operating systems is the share button brought in from iOS, brought in from, I think, Android and Windows Phone have similar buttons where you click and then it says, you know, would you like to email this, do whatever you want with this. You know, the model has always been, if you have something you want to send to somebody, it's a manual process. You know, you open your email software, you compose a message, then you attach the file going from the email out to your hard drive. Whereas now, from any application that's open and has an open document, there's now a button in many of those apps up at the top that says share. You can share to Twitter, Facebook, email. I think Flickr was on there. There's a number of share options. What do you make of the share function? Because I've seen this on websites emerging, the little shares to specific places. And I'm not really sure. I'm torn about whether that's a good thing or a bad thing.
Well, do you know what's really frightening for me? And I know this is slightly off the tack a little bit. But I've got, every time I take a photo on my Android phone, it automatically uploads a copy to Dropbox, which is really useful because then immediately it's available on my desktop PC and I can sort of do stuff with it. Can you imagine automatically any photo you take automatically being uploaded to Facebook? Oh, that is unthinkable, even if it's an accident.
Just seeing a picture I took yesterday on the train, you wouldn't want to see that. And exactly. I think part of it is, in a funny way, I mean, I did sit through the presentation, and I don't want to go into it, I really don't, but one of the things I'd say is they were trying to be very grown up. And in a funny way, Twitter seems more grown up than Facebook. Twitter seems like that's for adults and Facebook is for, not necessarily for children, but that's where adults maybe act a little bit more childish, play games, do things like that, whereas Twitter is for conversation, for chat, for, you know, actually
for
passing
news.
Information around. Yeah.
For news,
so maybe,
yeah.
Maybe they thought, you know, we're presenting this to the world in a professional, grown-up way. Maybe Twitter is the thing to show them how the system works. But Twitter says, you know, we're a bit more professional. This is a professional phone. This is a professional bit of software. This is for grown-ups, and this will help your business, and this will help that. Because of, you know, Twitter in business is acceptable. Facebook in business gets you in trouble. So maybe that absolutely. Might just be what it was. They just wanted to see a bit more grown up.
I think you're right, Alex. I mean, certainly it's amazed me how fast Twitter has actually taken off. And I think in some extent with brands and stuff, it has overtaken Twitter. But I do see a lot more, you know, slash whatever brand on Facebook, on adverts, on billboards and stuff. And I think it is catching up.
But it's almost like it's an alternative to having a website or as well as having a website. Whereas Twitter's nothing to do with a website. Twitter is a two-way conversation. So Twitter is if you have a company with a Twitter handle, it's because they want to hear from you as well as talk to you. Facebook isn't about companies getting information, you know, your opinion. Your Facebook is just another way of sticking that advert on your desktop.
Especially if it's a fan page.
Yeah, exactly. Whether it be on a computer or anything, they might read their Facebook, whatever you do on Facebook, because I don't use it enough. But I'd say it's just an advertising revenue, whereas Twitter is a two-way thing. If you've got a company that's got a Twitter space, they want to hear your opinion on what they're doing. Otherwise, they wouldn't bother having one.
I think you're right. I think you're right, Alex. Twitter is also the more respected platform for businesses, for I mean, everyone, even the president of the United States. I mean, I think even the Queen is now on Twitter, right? I mean, everyone, everyone who's anyone is on Twitter, and they use it as sort of their personal news ticker, their news feed. If you have a question about a certain celebrity or a certain person, what are they up to, or the status of a website, what is a company up to? You check Twitter because you just expect that they'll post the status on Twitter.
Yeah, when there's a coup in the Middle East, no one says, yes, it was Facebook that got the news out. It was Twitter. Dang. You know, it's the grown-up communication tool. It's the grown-up mass communication tool. We don't need games on Twitter. We don't need advertising. We don't need any of that stuff. It's about people passing on information in a very quick, reliable way. And I think, going back to the original point, I think that is what Apple need. That they need that in there. They want to be associated with that far more than they want to be associated with trivial game playing advertising. Because you remember, if they do integrate with Facebook, the advertising revenues off of them integrating with Facebook goes to Facebook. And it's actually a competition for them. Whereas with something like Twitter, it isn't a competition. It just aids them and it aids the usefulness of their product. Whereas the other way around, I'm not sure I don't think they get so much out of Facebook as they would out of having Twitter.
Let's see some other features announced from. Oh, sorry, James.
I was going to say, you kind of wonder whose decision it was, because obviously I just think I always find myself thinking, I wonder what Steve Jobs would do. Because I wonder if you know, you kind of, I know it's speculation, but I wonder if that was what he intended for Apple to link up with. And as you say, it was way down the running order of the keynote, and there were so many wonderful shiny things that were included that was intended to draw people's attention, not necessarily away from it, but certainly it was kind of like small letters towards the bottom. I wonder if actually even Apple wanted to make a big thing out of it at all. Anyway, it's just a thing they wanted to do because it's probably quite easy.
Apple, I mean, I believe when they did the me.com from the mac.com, I think that was Apple's attempt to sort of get into the Hotmail area, which then leads you into the iMessage area. So give it a couple of years and there will be an Apple-based, Twittery sort of iMessage-y sort of me.com network.
I think that
everyone else will be able to get into it via getting an iTunes account or a me.com account, but it will be their method of doing it.
I think Apple sorry, go ahead, sir.
When James was saying, I would often wonder what Steve Jobs would do, I was thinking, Steve would actually say, okay, fine, that's out there. And this is what we're going to do, and we're going to do it better.
I think Apple actually thought that they were going to have their own social network. I think that was part of the delay for partnering with Facebook or even Twitter, because, I mean, it took them years to start partnering with any social network leaders out there. You know, look at Ping. The rumors are they're going to kill their service called Ping with the next update to iTunes. When Ping came out, I thought, considering the name, they picked such a generic name a term people use. I'll ping you, meaning like I'll contact you later. I'll send you an email or a tweet or something. I'll get in touch with you. Ping was such a universal term. I always thought that they had grander ambitions for that than merely iTunes music suggestions and playlist sharing. What do you think? Did Apple have stronger ambitions there? And then they realized, oh, you know what? Facebook kind of has that covered.
Well, I think the trouble is that ping ponged. I'll leave that one there for you.
Why didn't they call it something like iTwitter?
Well, they've got iChat, which is actually a very good system, and it's a good name. And so what do? They call it iMessage and get rid of it. Mm. There's certain things that I think they don't do particularly well. And one of them is they've only just worked out how to make a mass product. And as much as they're making a fortune out of it, it's still so niche. Apple don't do something if they're giving it away for nothing. And basically, Twitter client is... I mean, if they'd have monetized Twitter for, 1 cent every 50 tweets, whoever designed Twitter would be one of the richest people in the world at the moment. But, that's not Apple's way of doing things. They will not do anything mass market, and they certainly won't do something mass market if there isn't a 30% skim off the top for them.
I'm looking at the iOS 6 preview page on the Apple site, and every one of the icons at the top is one of Apple's own properties, own trademarks, own icons, except for Facebook. I don't think they like that. That's not how Apple rolls.
We own the world.
We own the people. Oh, sorry.
What else do you guys think? I mean, Maps. They're going to have. They said goodbye to Google
Tom
Maps.
Tom.
What?
TomTom.
Yes, I just found that out this morning. Actually, that it's TomTom who's going to be providing the mapping function. So at least that's one company that won't go out of business as a result. But of course, Garmin.
You say that.
You mean they're providing?
But TomTom have for a long while been charging premium prices for their map updates. If they're going to be giving them away free as part of an iOS installation, what's that going to do? The licensing cost is going to be negligible, isn't it?
I assume it's going to be a totally free and updated service for people. Yeah.
What that says to me is TomTom actual hardware devices that sit on the dashboard of your car, they're dead, gone.
I think so. Anyone else?
Well, I still think
I tend to agree. I think it's a stepping stone.
But the hardware's not up to it either. I've got TomTom. I've also used an iPhone in the car on a mount, and it's not up to the job. If you use the iPhone TomTom app, I don't know if they still do it, but it came with a little aerial boost clampy thing because the GPS wasn't up to the job. Not inside a car. It's not really designed for it. So the GPS component for the TomTom iPhone connector thing was a massive part of the usefulness of it. Maybe they've just thrown their hands in the air and go, look, we can't beat these buggers. Let's just take what we can before they destroy us completely.
It could be.
See, I was wondering if they would do like a double pole attack. So they'd buy TomTom and then really string Google up for stealing all the data as they go around mapping the place.
But,
say, TomTom didn't do that, you buggers.
No, but the thing is, okay, they're going. They've got their own mapping system, and they've taken the Google mapping system off. The Google mapping system is still free to everyone on the planet with an internet connection. I can't really see this iOS version, even if they bring it out. I mean, I don't know why you'd want it on an iMac because they're pretty hard to drive around with them on the windshield. But I'm not sure why you'd want one. But so yeah, they've. As radical as it sounds, a great idea as it sounds, they're talking about, their software sitting on one of their devices, whereas, the Google format is going to be here for years and years and years and years to come.
Does the latest version of Android have free turn-by-turn navigation in this way, or is Apple the first to do this for free?
I think it does.
It does have it. Does it do voice? Like, does an automated, robotic voice say, at the next light, make a left?
Yeah, absolutely. It's done that for quite a while now. Yeah.
Do you happen to remember since which version?
It's done it since Froyo.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Froyo. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh yeah. Well, I was just about to put in the chat room that I've been using my Google phone to navigate me since before I can remember. Since I got it, basically, because it's got everything I want, and I don't have to take an extra device in the car and risk sticking it in the glove box. I've got my sat nav with me in my pocket. And actually, it's even better because if I get lost, I've got turn by turn on walking as well. The only annoying thing is that it does have this sort of disembodied computer voice, which they haven't really improved, rather than, I don't know, Brian Blessed, who's much better. Take the left turn!
Another controversial update is Passbook. This is sort of their answer to Google Wallet, kind of, again, following in Google's footsteps with a product that may arguably end up being more popular. It's not so much a payment system yet, but analysts are speculating that it could become that. Right now, it seems to be a place to have... They show Target, Fandango, Starbucks, Amtrak, the Apple Store. They showed us a place to aggregate your gift cards, any kind of thing where you would need a barcode or a... QR code or something to show proof of a purchase or proof of having, they mentioned your Starbucks card. If you've ever tried that, Starbucks can have a virtual card that is prepaid on your iPhone, and you hold up the iPhone and they scan that, and that deducts money from your account. So using the phone for payments. And now they're going to have a whole new system of your boarding passes, like to get onto your plane. Instead of having to flip through the home screen until you find the app, log into the app, hope that you have internet access and get on to show or download your boarding pass. Instead, it's all right there from the home screen, sort of like a little passport book, or literally a passbook. What do you guys think of this?
I think that if someone takes something that Apple believe is their idea, they jump up and down, they throw their toys out the pram, and they, I don't know a company that's had more legal actions than them, which is probably why I shouldn't say this, but... the other way around, they don't seem to mind so much, I've noticed. I mean, what you'd said is quite right. Google had a product like this, slightly more advanced than this. It could have gone into, it could have been pushed into the Android, the area. I think part of what's driving all of this is one-upmanship. And whereas in in a lot of cases, especially in this country, one company will do something and it tends to be the competition benefits the customer. I don't think that this is driven by benefit of the customer. It seems to be driven by sheer bloody mindedness from all sides. And they don't really care so much about the customer because of it's just, okay, that's a good idea, so we'll do it better. But, there comes a point where we just want a bit of collaboration, and it goes back to the Facebook thing. It sounded like a good idea until they thought for half a second, hold on, is someone else is going to take a minute advantage out of this situation more than us or as well as us, and the whole thing seems to collapse in a heap. I just think, I saw that and I thought, you know what? If that was the other way around, they would be in the press jumping up and down and said, that's our idea. How dare you? We want that company stopped in that part of the world from being able to use that bit of software.
Alex, yeah.
To be honest.
That's a great point, Alex. Apple will cry bloody murder when someone steals their product. I mean, Tim Cook was just asked on the All Things D stage in that big interview, what is his take on Android? Does he think that it was, as Steve Jobs is quoted as saying in his biography, grand theft, like it was stolen outright, and we're gonna get these guys because they're jerks and they just stole our property. But then they go and they rip them off all the time, don't they? Look, next feature on the list was something that Google first did. At least the first time I saw it was an ice cream sandwich. When someone calls you now, right there on the screen, you can slide up when you're receiving an incoming call, and you have the option of replying with a text message or remind you later to call them. And when you reply with a message, you get the automated choice that they give you. You can do a custom text, but right there they have, I'll call you later, I'm on my way, what's up, or custom or other. Again, fantastic function, incredibly useful. I think when you come up with it with a best possible breakthrough like that, I think it, that is a thing that you should copy. I don't really think one company should have a monopoly on that, kind of like with multi-touch or pinch to zoom. It's like I have respect for the company that comes up with that, sure, and I want them to be successful with their original idea. But once you find the best possible way to do something, don't you then have a duty to humanity to let other people enjoy that as well?
Well, especially when it comes to things like touch, because of, unless you're unfortunate not to have all your fingers and, a two-finger swipe is an obvious move. Three finger swipe, whatever it is. Okay, someone come up with 11 finger swipe and make that one work, then I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. But you're right, there's certain things. I mean, you know, you put the phone to your ear to say hello. You say hello. I mean, are we going to, is someone going to patent the idea of receiving a phone call and the first thing you say is hello or whatever? There's got to be a point where, I don't know how it works in America, but here you've got two sort of laws. You've got a criminal law and a common law. And basically what the common law means is if it's ridiculous on a point of law, it gets thrown out. You know, it's like, you know, okay, you're right in theory, but it's a stupid idea, you know. Yeah, if someone picks up the phone, are you going to sue them because you designed the original pickup of the phone? But what needs to be done is there needs to be, if you like, a worldwide system of saying, no, that's ridiculous. But if you do step over the line, then they really come down hard on you. No, you're not just a financial penalty, maybe I don't know what we have here. We have company felonies, if you like. And, the head of the company will actually get imprisoned or something. You know?
Wow, maybe we certainly do. I can assure you we do not have that here. We probably have the largest number of CEOs that people would like to see in jail, and they're not going anytime soon.
Well, yeah, we have corporate manslaughter, but I think you can also go down for things like corporate negligence, which includes, you know, basically bankrupting a company for your own means and all that sort of thing. You know, you can do that sort of thing here, but what I'm saying is, there's so many petty, stupid ideas that are being thought about, and all they're doing is keeping the lawyers' welfare. What they want to do is they want to cut off point. No, that's nonsense, that's nonsense, that's nonsense. Yeah, okay, that was a great idea, Google. This is our version. What do you think of it? You know, be honest, be open. We'll all go, yeah, I like what Apple did that.
We need more Google grumpy judges, basically, who'll just take one leg and just go, bugger off.
Yeah, that's...
Call this mess. Get Brian Blessed to do it all.
Yeah, but the trouble is then they'd be able to come back with another 58 appeals. So you need a cut-off point.
Give up soon enough.
Once you go over a certain point, then you need to come down hard. I mean, to me, I can't say that anyone copied anyone, but there's also a point, you know, you look at the shape of a car. I made this point recently. If you look at the shape of a car, if you get a computer to design a car, which is the most fuel efficient and the most aerodynamic, they're all going to pretty much look like each other.
Sarah,
that's the way it works.
Sarah, did you have any thoughts on Apple's software announcements, or maybe have some insight on how it compares to your... I know you're sort of the token Windows and Linux fan, I think, of the panel today.
I suppose I am. No, I didn't particularly have any thoughts on the subject.
Well, anything that you look in and you see, it's clearly better on Windows, or that's clearly better on Android.
What, generally, or on the announcements?
Just on the announcements. Any features that you think, we've had that already on our side?
Not specifically, no.
Okay, great. So new features all around.
If anything, actually, from my point of view, as somebody who's I wouldn't say eagerly anticipating the arrival of Windows 8, not least because it still doesn't look like it's fully cooked, Apple are just taking one more sort of stride into the world of cool, while Microsoft are really struggling to keep up. Yes, they've come up with an innovation, but until we see the release candidate of Windows 8 and we can actually see that what we want it to do is what it's got to do, and heaven forbid there's a ribbon involved, it's a complete irrelevance. They are beginning to diverge to the point where Apple is Apple and Microsoft are oranges. You can't really compare them anymore.
Yeah, I think
it's like comparing Apple with Microsoft.
If you want to put it like that, it should be the way it should be. Is Apple is cool, Microsoft is corporate.
Well, who's Google? What's Android? Where do they stand? Android is open?
All right. I read a tweet that said
Android is the most successful failure of the technological world.
What did they mean?
I don't think it is. I don't think it's a failure.
Well, what did they mean?
It works properly, but everybody's got one. That's what it means.
Hold on, I just want to understand, because that's an interesting tweet there. So they're saying that so many people have an Android but don't even really know that they have an Android or have any brand loyalty or even comprehend the significance of that.
Yeah, It's a cheap phone that does what they want it to do. It's got all this cool stuff with it, but there's an episode. There's more brand loyalty with Apple than there is for any Android phone. You buy a Samsung, then you buy an HTC. Yeah, then you buy. You know, I think it's only because nobody's heard of Windows Mobile. People are buying Windows Mobile phones, but the fact is, there are so many Android handsets out there, and you can do the basics on it. You can read your email. You can tweet. You can't even really tweet. There isn't really a brilliant Twitter app for Android. I still haven't found one.
Last story before the cool picks, I think MacBook Pro, what do you guys think about that? First computer, first laptop with a Retina display. They've quadrupled the resolution. They've doubled it in each dimension, just like they've done with the iPhone and the iPad. I think a Retina display offers one of the biggest improvements to personal computers in the last 10 to 20 years. I think now that we've sort of plateaued on our need for CPU and our need for GPU, basic tasks are no longer hindered by just having those things. Only really the top end gamers are really affected by that. I think for the rest of us, having a sharp, crisp display like that, sharper than we've ever seen before, like a printed page, is a huge deal. What do you guys think of this? Will this become the standard with all laptops in the Windows world and the Linux world soon enough?
I really want it.
Well, I think it shouldn't be the MacBook Pro. I think it should be called the Mac Air Pro, which is something that I've been getting a bit upset about today. Yes, look, the screen is a great idea. It's a really good improvement. It's a beautiful screen. And when the hold on production of these type of screens has been released, which it won't be for a couple of years, I'm sure, then that will become the standard, or someone else will go past that standard. But my issue isn't so much with the screen. The screen is a great idea. It's the bits you need to run that screen properly, to drive that sort of screen. And just remembering that, okay, Apple is a walled garden. They've built the software to go on their machine that they've built. You know, everything about it has been put together. There's no third-party interference. There's no problem. For any other manufacturer to do that, it's a real problem. I mean, this is something I got really annoyed about in that thing that Apple did the other day. They were going on about how, it's all to do with the uptake of the iPhone against Android. And, you know, but the thing is, or sort of complaints, I can't even remember the bit now because I got so annoyed. You've got places like Microsoft and Android. Now, they're making software that has to work on, I mean, look at Microsoft, for instance. How many different varieties of hardware, how many different connections are there, how many different components are put together? And even if you think the thing's crap, it still manages to work on an almost infinite amount of possibilities.
Yeah, interesting, yeah, you're right. And Windows 8 is including support for these high DPI displays. It looks like only in their
that's the point.
Only in Metro, though. Yeah, only in the in their new system of rendering, where it's completely, what would you call it? Not vector based, but it's not bitmapped. It's not like instead of having like size 14 font
of resolution, it's
resolution independence. Yeah, it's relative size as opposed to a specific point size.
Yeah, whereas, I mean, Apple, they can build this because every part of the structure is built purely to fit within this machine, the software, the hardware, the whole thing.
I heard one report, actually, that you can't even install Boot Camp. If you try to install Windows and run it natively, it won't even run on these things yet. Windows 7.
No, I wouldn't be surprised. And yes, the answer is yes, that technology, I don't think it will be Retina. It will be some other display because of the manufacturing and the patents and whatever goes with this Retina display will be locked down so tightly for a number of years so that, you know, Apple can use the most of it. And, you know, fair enough. They pushed it. They paid for it. They developed it.
Interesting.
Someone else will come up with something.
Possibly un-Steve Jobs-like. They introduced the next generation of the product, but kept the old generation in. They updated that. I was hoping to see a Retina display on an all-new MacBook Air. We did not get that. Rumor also had it was going to be in all the MacBook Pro lines. They didn't do that. They took an odd approach. They kept all those machines physically the same, or, you know, aesthetically the same, and upgraded the internals, but then made this new next-generation MacBook Pro that exists alongside them, that has no optical drive, has only flash memory, has this Retina display, has a couple of other really cool features like that, has USB 3. I think the others may have gotten USB 3 as well, also, finally. I'm guessing that that does have to do with not only pricing, but availability. I think, Alex, you're right. They probably did buy up all the supply that they could of these Retina displays. So it'll probably be a while before any other PC manufacturers can even get their hands on Retina displays, on these high DPI displays, and whatever graphics power is a secret sauce to make it happen. But, you know, a year or two down the road, I mean, do you think this will be a trend across the in the Windows space too? Sort of the, and I want to point out the high DPI. First time ever, really, that the relative size of screen elements is the same. The window bar is the same. The file menu is the same size. You know, all these things are the same, but just using twice as many pixels to represent them. So you think that's the trend going forward?
Well, I think there is a point where, I mean, you know, I'm a photographer. I work on large screens all the time. But there is a point where things get actually too small. I don't care how sharp they are. It's too small to read. Right. You can have a magazine printer of a 1,000 lines print if you wanted, yeah, DPI, whatever way you look at it, you could look at 1,000 DPI, it would look beautiful and sharp. But if you then brought that down to 200 DPI, which they're normally printed at, and it only fitted in the corner of that page, you'd need a magnifying glass to read it,
right?
So it doesn't matter how sharp it is, if you make it too small, it could be the most finely, beautifully sharp line, but you're still not going to be able to see it. So it's reached the point where if you get any smaller, if you remember the old Windows displays where you just kept changing the resolution and all the icons kept smaller and smaller and smaller, if you then looked at the highest resolution you had and then made them quarter of the size again, it'd be pointless. They'd be beautifully sharp with a magnifying glass, but you wouldn't be able to use the machine. So that is the only way it's going to go. They've shrunk everything. It's like the iPhone. They're talking about the new iPhone needing to be a bit bigger because even though it's got a Retina display and it's beautifully and sharp, you still can't read properly because the type is too small to read. Right. So, yes, the short answer is yes, you can get more resolution. You can't make what's on that screen any smaller because it's too damn small to see.
Absolutely, you just have to make bigger versions of it. It's all about scalability. I'm just trying to look. Because my Galaxy S it's got a kind of like near retina display. But if I get too close, I think I might need glasses because it goes all fuzzy.
Well, it's very hard to focus.
I don't want to stop playing with it now. Can we do cool things?
Yes, we're just about to. Sarah, any thoughts?
I was just going to say, so answer one question. If you haven't got 20/20 vision, what's the point of a retina display?
Well, wear glasses.
There you go. We go wear glasses. Does that do it? I would think that would do it.
No. What I'm saying is there's no point to it. I just think it's a gimmick.
You think it's a gimmick? Have you seen a Retina display?
Absolutely. Yes, I have seen on an iPad 3, or the new iPad, whatever they want to call it. And it's a gimmick. Yeah, I know it's sharp. That's good. It looks great, but...
Oh, I don't think it's a gimmick. Well, remember also, this is not, it's not just the resolution. It's also got in-plane switching. So if you know, the iPad display is phenomenal for its viewing angles. You can turn it and rotate it all different ways. It does not change the viewing angle. What? Are you serious? But I mean, look at this. Look, I anyone who's seen my reviews on YouTube of the MacBook Airs, I've gone into great detail about how, you know, the slightest change in viewing angle and your whole color is washed out. It's impossible to do any kind of video color editing.
I saw your video. How do I make this happen? Because I have to say, I don't really have that problem.
Now, you've got the 11 or the 13?
This is 11.
Okay, well, it's less pronounced on the 11, but I think it still should be there. I mean, basically, open up I think in that video, I'd put a link to like a monitor test site. If that's not still working, find something that shows that is either blue or purple, some primary color like that, and then turn the display, you know, open and close it, or like even just move yourself in your chair up and down a bit, and you'll see the blue become purple, and you'll see the red become pink, and you'll see these color shifts that change with the viewing angle that are terrifying to anyone like a video editor or a photographer who has to deal with an accurate color. Sorry?
Who is that? What video editor is using the MacBook Air though?
Well, I think you'd be surprised. I mean,
really?
Yeah. No. If you
know, I've said that.
If you go to their website, they're going to show Final Cut Pro 10 running on Airs.
That's true.
Yeah. And they're, and I mean, that's what they're saying here is for the new MacBook Pro with the Retina display, they're saying it's great for video editors because you can show 1080p video in a scaled down window and still have it 1-to-1 pixel representation.
That's very impressive. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's gonna be, go ahead.
So it's going to be like the old days where, yeah, it might be great, but yeah, I don't know. Obviously, I'm too young to remember this, but you had 12-inch screens in the old days for televisions with 20-inch magnifiers on the front. And that's what you're going to end up doing. You're going to have a 13-inch MacBook Pro, which is going to be brilliant resolution, and you're going to be able to have the whole of Final Cut Pro in a 1/4-inch box in a corner because it's going to be 10,000 dots across.
No.
You're going to need a 20-inch magnifier to be able to see the data.
No, because the sizes stay the same.
That's my point. That's my point. So it gets to the point where the whole idea of Retina, there was no discernible difference at a certain level with your eye. Now, if you've got the money to buy the sharpest, most wonderful piece of equipment in the world, then spend it. You know, by all means, if it makes that much except that
Apple isn't really building in a higher cost for that, are they? I mean, the iPhone is competitively priced with the other with Android phones and everyone else. So is the iPad. So in those cases, this Retina display pretty much comes along as a free bonus.
Well, I don't think it's a free bonus. I think it was the fact that if you like Apple, when Apple brought out the first iPhone, it was brilliant for what it was, but it was a pretty crappy machine. You know,
okay, well, we're out of time, and also the chat room is saying, what is this now, the Mac show? But yeah, I think if anyone who's arguing against the Retina display, you just have to spend more time with it or maybe get a check on your prescription for your glasses, because I think it's eye-popping. Thank you, Joe, for agreeing with me.
I think it's the best thing they did to the iPhone in years.
And this coming from a man who can't see the difference between VHS and HD, I know that's not true. But <they're, laughs> leave it to the guy recording the podcast on VHS tape to argue in favor of crisp displays. All right. No, I'm just kidding, Joe. But all right. I want to move on to cool things, but also we have to thank our sponsor, UK2.net. As Ewan says, they've been a sponsor here for 3 years now. Pick up all the bandwidth for the British Tech Network. Let's see. Announcements from Ewan are that British Tech's had a great week in iTunes for the past 2 weeks. Lots of downloads, so thank you for the listeners for doing that. Mac Show had 10,000 downloads Sunday morning in 4 hours alone. Thanks to everyone who's listening, and please check out all those shows when you have time. There's some great content there. The message from you, and also UK2.net, who are the sponsors and do the bandwidth. You have bonus offers as a loyal British Tech listener. If you go to the British Tech homepage, you can get access to a bunch of UK2 offers. Type British Tech as the first part, all one word, and then you get to choose your offer code after that. British Tech DNS gets you no DNS charges for 2 years. British Tech Domains get you 20% off. That's a huge percent off, 20% off the price of domains. And not just one domain, but any, apparently. British Tech VPN gets you months of free VPN, and British Tech VPS, I don't even know what that is. Virtual private server, I guess?
Virtual private server, yeah.
50% off of that. Wow, 50% off your first month of that. So there you go, UK2.net, and please access them via the British Tech Network homepage because that's how we get the credit. All right, thank you. And so do we have any cool things? Let's start with James. I think he was the most eager to roll. Has a cool thing ready.
No, joke. I have to give credit to my bandmate. I'm a member of a small musical community called Jam Folder. We've made some interesting music so far, and my bandmate DT90, who's in the chat room, has got himself a record player, and he was trying to get it up and running again. And one thing he didn't know how to do was to work out what speed route it was going round. And it turns out there is an application for the iPhone, because the iPhone has got a rotation detector on it. So not just a screen rotation, it is a rotation rate detector. Can you believe it? And this is called iRPM. And if I can switch over to the other camera, I'm going to see if I can go to my other camera, because this will be great if it works. So if I go to options, video settings, and change to...
I can't wait to see what's the utility of this. Let's see, how do you use this?
There it is, right. So there it is on my turntable. The turntable was a bit dark, but here we go. And I start it going.
We can't see it, James.
You can't see. There we go. It tells you what speed the turntable is going around.
I can see you standing up, James.
45.5 miles. You can't see it. Oh, nope. Damn it. Hang on, so let me just click over. Save.
45.5 miles per hour. Very good.
Now, is that what it's designed to do, is to measure a record player?
And it's basically, it's a rotation speed detector.
Look at that.
What speed is going around? So it's at 45, and I'll go down to 33. 33 wow. point.
That was instantaneous, wasn't it?
You know, you see those big things on bus wheels that like track how far the wheel's gone without the bus being attached to it, sort of thing. You can have iPhones strapped to bus wheels to tell how far they've gone. The
It's about what they're good for.
Yeah. So, what is the use of that?
Similar application for the Android phone, but they didn't have one. The best they had was something which detects the speed your engine's going round by listening to the tone of it, and it does a frequency analysis and works out what the speed, what your revs are. But it doesn't have, most mobile phones don't have a rotation detector. But that is just, isn't that brilliant?
That is fantastic,
what you,
yeah.
What you need to do is check the 1200 spin on your washing machine.
Right? Stick it on the front. I'm not doing that.
I thought I had you for a minute.
That is cool. I still don't really get it though. Like what are they, what are most people using those for?
I've got no idea. It's to test how fast your record player is going around.
Is there,
it's an RPM measure.
So it really is for the record player?
Well, I would imagine so. Well, unless you can think of something for... People write...
I can't think of anything.
What is the rotation speed detector in an iPhone 4? I've still not got... You know, until someone wrote that application, it was pretty much useless, wasn't it?
No, I know what it's for. If you want to reenact that scene in Ghost on the Potter's wheel... If you want to get the speed of the Potter's wheel just right, you need to put your iPhone on top and then get the... That's what it's for. You could use it if you were working with a lathe because the revolutions per minute is really important for cutting wood.
And where do we find that, James?
It's out flying off.
And where can we find that?
If you go to the App Store and type in IRPM, I'll stick a link in the chat room. It's not the one that detects. There are some other IRPM applications, but you'll find the one that's called, it's by Divino. And the description goes, this is great. Have you ever wanted to know how fast you can spin around?
See, I knew there was a more useful use for it.
It's for drunk people.
No, ice skaters, you know when they do that funny thing? You could strap it to their head and you could have an ice skating competition who's the fastest spinner on the ice.
What's the price?
It's free.
It's priceless.
Great.
Yeah, absolutely. All right,
Alex, your pick.
I feel really tough. There's no point now after that. Colloquy, whatever it is called. You know, we advise people for the IRC client for joining us in the chat room. Because the one that's built in, I mean, I find it works okay, but a lot of people like to use a separate client. I was really late and I was really bored at work and I couldn't listen to the show. And I just thought, you know what would be fun? Joining the chat room and have absolutely no idea what the conversation is, but try and join in anyway. So anyway, I found this colloquy for iPad and iPhone on the App Store. So when I should have been working, I just basically joined in the conversation in the chat room and it was brilliant. Because I had no idea what was going on, but I had a really good time. So, also, I mean, if you do have access, one of the things is I think it's a Flash-based IRC client, which I haven't managed to get to work on my iPhone and things. So if you do want to join in and you can only listen and you can't type wherever you are, you can type on your iPad or iPhone. It's £1.49. I think there are other IRC clients, but as I tried this on their version for the Mac and I really liked it, I thought, you know what, it works, let's just try this and it's great, no problem. So go and get it now.
Sounds good. Sarah, do you have a pick?
Well, I think I probably got a pick XChat, which I use just as in the same way.
That's the competitive product, isn't it?
But it is superb. But no, seriously,
there's XChat.
There it is.
Oh, Joe's got it. He's got it on his computer.
I got it on one of my machines, yeah.
Now, is that for iPhone 2 or that's only for the desktop?
Well, I only use it on desktop, but I run a Linux client and a Windows client and it works fine. I wasn't going to pick it as my pick, but because I think I picked it before, but it is very good, and it is certainly the most customizable IRC client I've ever used.
I mean, one of the reasons I like things like Colloquy is it's not customizable and I can't break it.
All right, good picks. My pick, I have two. One is a repeat from last week, but it's still going on. The Mac Update Bundle from June 2012, $49.99 for, I don't know, what is this, 11 Mac apps. And if you have
$1 million worth of stuff.
Honestly, this is, I think, the best value of this type of bundle I've ever seen. They've got Jaxta, the program for downloading, sort of like ripping Flash video off of various web pages. I've told you how useful that is and how I just bought that for $50 recently. Now it's bundled for $50. ScreenFlow is $100. That's free. BusyCal, Parallels Desktop, Speed Download, all the stuff. Like, I already own most of these programs. And you know, it's a, what does it say? A $500 value for $50. So definitely check that out at mupromo.com. You've got 6 days as of June 14th to get to that. Also, one that may unfortunately be gone by the time you listen to this download of the podcast, but as we're live right now, I think you can still get to the Humble Indie Bundle. It's a similar type of deal, except it's not for Mac users. It's cross-platform. It's for Mac, Windows, and Linux. Totally digital rights management, DRM-free games. So they're DRM-free, there is no copy protection, and you choose your own price. They've got Limbo, they've got Bastion, they've got Braid, Super Meat Boy, all these games that were, I think, breakout hits on the Xbox Live Arcade a year or so ago, and now they're totally cross-platform, and if you want, you can pay only a dollar, or you can put any amount and choose to give to charity or the EFF or however you'd like to do it. Support the developers. That's at humblebundle.com. And my fourth or my third kind of pick, how did we get up to four? My third pick is sort of a, well, because I'm thinking 4G. My third pick is something I forgot to mention earlier. Alex had thrown it in earlier, and I didn't mention it because I was waiting until we got to the Apple part, and then I forgot. In their announcement, Apple said that FaceTime, the two-way voice communication, will be available on cellular coming in the fall. They did not say 3G or the word 4G. They've always used the words 2G or 3G to describe specifically what kind of cellular they're talking about. For the first time ever, they just said cellular. I thought about this. I think this means we can absolutely expect to see a 4G iPhone come out this fall and that FaceTime will be available only on 4G, not on 3G. So that's my little contribution to the rumors regarding that. Just quickly, what do you guys think about that? I think Verizon and those guys are going to use 4G as the reason to upgrade. You're going to have to upgrade a 4G phone, a new phone, in order to have the two-way voice calls. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, 4G seems to be... obsolescence. 4G seems to be happening faster in the States than it is over here. There's a bit of a trial going on over here in Cornwall, which BT are doing, but that's about it, really. But I hear more things in the US than I do over here.
Well, I think 4G might have the bandwidth to be able to cope with it, whereas I don't think 3G would actually have the... It would crash the network if you put it on 3G anyway.
Yeah.
And James, did you start to say something?
Oh, no, I can't... What's this built-in obsolescence all about? Why can't we just all work... Why can't I use my 3310 anymore?
I know. Why can't you FaceTime on the old Nokia 3310?
Nokia.
All right. Yeah. Nokia, yes. And so, yeah, that's my little conspiracy rumor. Why didn't they say 3G, 4G, or 2G? Why did they just say cellular? Because they don't have a 4G iPhone, and it will be only for 4G. That's my little thing. All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. This has been the British Tech Big Show, streams live every Thursday at a time that I don't know. It's noon my time, but I know it's different for you guys. It's like 9 p.m. or something. And of course, you can see it available for download when it comes out. Thank you guys for being here. Where can we reach you, James?
On the Twitters at Syzygy, S-Y-Z-Y-G-Y. Follow me for nonsense.
And Alex?
You can get me on LXG Fox on Twitter and various other things on its network. Can I just make one sentence? I just want to say how sad I think it is that the 10,000 people at Nokia are losing their jobs. Mm. I'm sure we would have mentioned it if we had time. It's just, you know, it shows you how the world does change, because from the greatest provider of phones to, you know, are they going to be here in a couple of years? But anyway, I wish them all luck.
The fast pace of the tech world. And Sarah?
Exactly.
Burke, can we get a hold of you?
You can get a hold of me on the Twitters at SarahJaneUK and, as Alex says, on various other shows on the network, including the F1 show and the web show.
And my name is Eric Lanigan. You can get a hold of me at my website, ericlanigan.com, and twitter.com/EricLanigan, ERIKLANIGAN. Ewan Rankin will be back hosting the show next week. So thanks for watching and listening, and we'll see you next time on The Big Show. The end.
Then you have to clap
done.
Again.
2 hours. That was an epic one.
That was about an hour and 25.
Yeah,
I got an hour and 24 minutes.
Yeah, I clocked an hour and 23. That's why I started to rush things along to sort of near the end.
Yeah. I think.
And a quote from Stuart saying, that's the E120 gone in the VCR. Are you still recording, Joe?
No. I just stopped.
Uh-oh, did he say he just started?
No,
and there's the tape. There's the actual video cassette that contains our digital podcast.
Yeah,
of course. If it was in the US, it would be a T120, not an E120.
Oh, that's right. Why is it a T though?
I don't know.
NTSC, I guess.
The tape. James, did you know with IRPM, if you go the other way, you get a minus revolutions a minute?
Good Lord, no.
Wow. Quick, James, calculate. How many RPMs has that VHS tape been doing?
I don't know. Depends how
it doesn't
big the
like it
really,
if you do it,
it
too fast. The numbers can't keep up.
Couldn't you stick it with tape on top of the VCR and then stick it in the machine and see what happens?
Yes.
That's one thing you can use an iPhone.
You've saved me money, James, because I would have paid a tenner for this if I'd have known it was there.
Brilliant, isn't it? Isn't it fantastic? I love it.
I'm going to find uses for it.
Yeah, that's the only slight drawback, isn't it?
So, Joe, what...
Maybe if a friend finds me here... Let's see what this does.
Go on. So, Joe, I was a little distracted at the start of the show to figure out what we were doing with the video. So what exactly do you have and what do you need from me or from anyone else who made a backup?
Now, let's see if Wirecast recordings corrupt first. Yep, it's gone forever. So in terms of video, we have primary recording here, and apparently DT was recording the stream, which is going to be better than this, maybe.
And I've got my audio.
And you've got your audio and video, yeah.
I've got the audio from the video, so or from the stream, so...
I've got the audio from Skype. I thought I had the video from Skype, but I had the video turned off.
All right. Well, how about we do this then? What if Joe captures the VHS tape and puts that out as the podcast as the video, assuming that it looks good, sounds good, and then
we'll whatever happens, we'll replace the audio.
Oh, you're
I've
saying
got that, a half place some audio here.
Go on.
Well, wait, because I was thinking if the audio is acceptable enough for the video, you could use the VHS. But if not, we have...
I'm going to use the VHS for the video, but you clapped at the beginning, so I can just use that as a sync point and just sync up whoever's audio I get a hold of.
Okay. So let's do it like this then. Everyone send Joe a copy of...
I cannot believe we are having this discussion right now.
What do you want the audio in? What format? MP3?
No, uncompressed. Or lossless.
Well, okay, if you can get it over to me.
I can stick it in a Dropbox for if you like. I've got the uncompressed audio as well.
Right,
but then again, if DT could put the whole lot into a Dropbox, I'm sure for you, yeah. If you wish.
I think the frame rate on this is going to be better.
But, yeah, you know. Yeah. I mean, honestly, the VHS probably will be better than the screen cap, but it'd be worth comparing. But then, yeah, anyone who has the audio, send it to Joe uncompressed, and Joe, just take a listen and just pick whichever one sounds the best to you.
What's the uncompressed file type you want?
Because
I'm not sure it's recorded in, actually.
I mean, I'll
give you a WAV.
Yeah, just give them the native format of whatever your app recorded in.
Yeah, it recorded it in .move because of it was supposed to be video as well.
You get me there. Just email it muted me there, and that'd be great. And then we'll email it to Ewan, and he'll never know.
Well, the sound quality for this is normally quite good because it comes directly from Skype. It doesn't get messed about with. So,
sure.
How big is that file? Let me have a look.
You hear that, guys?
What's that?
Hello. Yeah.
suppose. To be honest with you, I'm completely. It's taken us a little while to get going, so I'm just sort of ramping up. I ought to have some chocolate coffee beans, really. To
that sounds good.
I'm starting to fall asleep already.
I'm not.
Jordan Max, I should mention, is switching the show, so thank you to him. He had to rewire some things. So
it's recorded through my mixer.
Okay, well, I've got 160 meg of audio. Does that sound about right?
We're listening to that through a speaker, though, right?
That
wasn't a direct feed.
No.
Okay, good. You know what, Joe? I'll also send you...
You're going to have a lot of crap to deal with, Joe.
I can do it.
You have 700 versions of the same thing.
Joe, do you use Levelator?
No, I use some other stuff, but not Levelator. Do you recommend it?
For something like this, I do. It's actually this kind of application is where Levelator is the king of, where you've got multiple voices on it. It was designed specifically for podcasting, where you've got just the level varying between individual person on the show.
Yeah.
So I would try that, because what I'll also do is, for your comparison, I'll send you my audio, run through Levelator, and just take a listen and just see, like, does the level sound good, and just pick whichever person's audio that you got that sounds the best, then just give that to you.
Is your audio just you?
No, my audio is me plus everyone on Skype.
Then we'll use yours, because you hosted the show, so we might as well.
Well, there is take that. Okay, I mean, that's what I was thinking, but there is, you know, if there was a better rip from the web, it might sound better, but I'll let you be the judge. I'll run it through Levelator, and I'll send that copy to you. Sound good?
There must be a way for us to, like, pluralize, but for video, that would take your local video and just replace the Skype video with it.
Well, there's significant sync drift, though. That's the issue. That's why whenever I've had to match it up in Final Cut, it's a lot of manual editing. Because it's not just that the sync is off, like, you talk and I hear you later. It's that throughout the course of the show, it's constantly... you know, jittering and warbling, so you never know who's before. All right, well, thanks, guys.
Can I dip out now at this point? I do apologize.
Yeah.
I get up at 5 tomorrow, so I will wish you a good evening, and thanks ever so much for your input and your company.
All right, thanks, James.
Cheers, James. Have a good evening.
You too. Good night.
Thanks, Alex. Thanks, Sarah. See you guys.
No problem. Cheerio.
Bye, Rick.
Bye, and thanks, Joe, and to the listeners. And Joe, just let me know if you have any questions. I'll be sending you my audio momentarily.
You have my email, yeah?
Yeah, it's on the screen now, I think, right?
Yeah, that's the one.
Okay. All right, I'll send it to you soon. All right, thanks, guys. Later.
All right.
Bye, Eric.